what an honor it is to sing together, and we are going to take another step here in our series on the gospel that makes us alive at work. And we're in the book of Thessalonians, the New Testament book. It's a church, and the pastor, Paul, has been inspired by God to instruct the church on what life looks like as gospel people. And of course, gospel people, for them, it means a life of work and balance. And we're going to talk specifically today about that. And here's where Paul goes in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. God willing, you'll be able to follow along behind me. Here's how Paul starts. He's talking to his church, and he says, "But we believers, or we leaders, we don't need to write to you about the importance of loving each other, for God himself has taught you to love one another. Indeed, you already show love for all believers throughout Macedonia." So Paul says, you're doing a great job. You're loving. God has shown us what love is, that he laid down his life for the needs and benefits of his friend. And you're doing. You're loving people. Good for you. And then Paul doesn't say, but your life is off balance, so you need to kind of restrain yourself from too much love. Instead, Paul says, keep doing that. I urge you. You're doing a great job loving all believers in the church family. Love them even more. But there is something, Paul says, I want you to restrain yourself from. I want to kind of help you to kind of bring balance to your life. And it's not loving less. Instead, Paul goes on to teach this. Make it your goal. Make it your goal. Aspire to. Plan, prioritize, aim for, have a vision for, make it your goal to live a quiet life, minding your own business and working with your hands, just as we instructed you before. See, Paul's already been over this. Paul's already told his church family this. He's already rehearsed this with them, saying, look, if you're going to be gospel people, make a goal to live a quiet life, mind your own business, and get working with your hands so you can produce and contribute. But we've already gone over them. So what does this mean? What this means is, this is not easy. Because Paul wasn't able to just say, hey, you remember the one time when we were talking about this and now you've got it? He doesn't say that. He says, oh, we've already instructed you this. We're going to go over this again. How many of you feel like most everything you've ever learned, you've had to hear it several different times from several different angles? Anybody willing to admit that? And this is what Paul says. Paul says, we've already instructed you this before. Then, if you're able to do this, people who are not believers, by the way, today, if that's you, if you're here and you're not really a believer, you don't know exactly how you ended up here, welcome. We're glad you're here anyway. If you need help finding your way home, we can probably GPS you all the way home. But we're glad you're here, and we want you to know that it is indeed important that people who believe and follow Jesus live in a way that is attractive to people who don't necessarily believe. Attractive, not repulsive. And here's what Paul says. Then people who are not believers will respect the way you live. Have respect for the way you live. And you will not need to depend on others. You won't live a dependence lifestyle. You won't have a lifestyle that is completely dependent on someone else's productivity or income. So here's what the gospel does. The gospel cautions us. It helps us to resist making our life goal success instead of balance. So the gospel cautions us to make our life goal a goal of balance in our life, not a life of success. That should be something that we just naturally say, well, of course. But it isn't, because we live in the culture that we live in, where for most of us, the pressing, urgent sensation that drives us all is we have to be successful. But Paul is teaching his church that's a different goal for believers. If you are a believer and you're following Jesus and he rules and reigns over your life, he's given us a new priority. It's a new goal, and we should aspire to it. It's a goal of life balance. Life balance, not a life of success. I'll never forget this story. When I was first starting out in starting a family, I recently married, I ended up at a conference, and I heard the speaker tell this great story. He's a family counselor. He spent his days in the office with his business, and then he spent his evenings counseling his customers, people, clients, whatever you want to call them. Excuse me. And then he would spend his weekends pastoring a church. So get this. During the day, office. During the evenings, counseling. And then on the weekends, pastoring. And one day, he told the story about how one day he finished up with one client, and was prepared for his next appointment, and he buzzes the secretary and says, okay, I'm ready, I'm done with my last appointment, send in my next appointment. He said, as soon as he said that, his daughter comes around the corner and he says, what are you doing here? She says, Daddy, I wanted to talk to you. And he said, I want to talk to you too. I'd love to talk to you. And she says, well, good, because I've met this guy, and I want to explain. I want to have a conversation about this relationship that I've got. And he said, honey, let's talk. But right now, I have another appointment. Let's talk after my appointment. She said, Daddy, look at me. I am your appointment. I called, and I made an appointment with the secretary, because I knew the only way I was going to get your undivided attention for 1 hour was to schedule an appointment in your office and to come see you. And I remember saying to myself, as a young minister, a young husband just beginning to think about starting a family, you know what I remember thinking to myself? That cannot be me. That cannot be me. Number one, I can't allow that to happen. Number two, I have to protect my life so that my daughter and son, my kids, don't have to make an appointment to see me. I still make my wife make an appointment to see me, but my kids, they shouldn't have to make an appointment to see me. And the truth is that whether you're a mom or a dad or an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent, if our children need to schedule an appointment to see us to get our undivided attention, we're off balance. Something has gone wrong. We're off the rails. Something is stealing from us, right? Most of us agree with that. And currently, my greatest source of stress as a leader, both at home and a leader in a church family, is balancing the expectations and demands that come from within me, or the expectations that are external, or the opportunities that are external and also internal that spiritual leadership involves. The needs are always present. The needs are always pressing. And the stress related to finding a balance in leading and loving myself, my family, my wife, my faith family, and the organizational aspect of leading a church body. And the question is always kind of circling in my mind, how much time is too much time to give to this? And then there's another question. How much time is too little time spent? My daughter's preparing to leave for college, and she's working on some paperwork to get ready to go, and I constantly have this thing in the back of my mind. Number one, how much financial aid are they going to give us? But then secondly, the second thing that's kind of circling in my mind all the time is, have you spent enough time with her? Have you spent enough time with her? Because the time is coming. And the time is coming where I'm not going to get to fix that. And we even discovered that we have to choose between downtime at home with the family and dinner guests. We love to host. My wife does some serious cooking, and we got a table just for hosting dinner guests, and we can take 8, 10, 12 at a time just to be together. And we have to find a balance between downtime for the family and dinner guests from the church family. If it were up to us, we'd have dinner guests from the church family 5 days a week. But we have discovered that there's a certain point in which we have enough dinner guests that our children in the evening begin to drift away from us because our house is full of adult church family connection. Now, they don't drift too far. We're in a little tiny house. They're only in the room next door. But they can emotionally begin to feel like we share our parents with other people. And they technically do, but we don't want them to feel that way in our own home all the time. So we're asking the question, where's the balance? How much is too much? And I want to tell you this, that our church leadership here that you elected as the trustees, the trustee deacons, have budgeted proactively some money in the budget to send the pastors away a couple times a year with their spouse to enrich their marriage above and beyond vacation. Why? Because they wanted to pay for marriage enrichment rather than pay for marriage counseling after it's too late. And I gotta tell you, I don't know many churches with that kind of foresight and character to say, let's help invest in the marriages of our pastors so we're not doing marriage counseling. Most of the churches I'm associated with and involved with, they were trying to figure out a restoration plan for a pastoral marriage that collapsed, and now we're trying to figure out how to help build that back up, how to restore and repair that. Thank God for mature spiritual leaders who said, we want to invest in the front end and be proactive. And because of that, my wife and I get to spend a couple of little getaways together and enrich our marriage. So I'm grateful for that as our church family invests in balance and marriage health. But this is the tension that we all face, right? We all have these balls in the air that we're juggling, and there's three primary demands: our family, including leading myself and leading our spouses and loving our spouses and our kids. And then we've got our faith family, the church family. That ball is in the air. How much am I going to participate, or how many people am I going to be connected with? And also work. And those three balls are in the air all the time, right? And we regularly hear ourselves saying, well, I'd love to be more involved in one, but I can't because I just don't have the time. Or I'd love to participate more and get to know more people in our church family. I'd like to kind of acquaint myself with some of the familiar faces or take on those new responsibilities. But work has been crazy what lately? You tell me. Crazy what? Busy. Crazy busy. My schedule. My work schedule. I'm crazy busy. I can't be more involved. And here's the thing that Paul identifies for us as believers, that without, if we're not careful, if we don't proactively create for ourselves some guardrails or boundaries, our chaotic, stressful lifestyles will overflow. Oh, let me use another word. Will overload us. And will create chaos as the demands of life and the expectations of life come collapsing down on us, and it whips into this spiraling cyclone that does all kinds of chaotic damage to our personal lives, our family, and our work life. Why? Because we have no guardrails, we have no filter, we don't know how to find balance in our lives. And Paul here says, he reminds us, and you may have remembered, we've already said in our series that work, by the way, work, our work is a terrible boss. Our work is never satisfied, our work is never complete. Our work says, okay, there, this is, we're all complete, you can now rest. There's always more work to do. But our hearts do not belong to work. Our lives don't belong to our work. Our hearts do not belong to our culture, which says you are to be driven for and always planning on and investing your time to be successful. Followers who belong to Jesus, listen to this, they receive their life priorities from Him. See, if you put your trust in Jesus and you have decided that you're going to follow and honor Jesus with your life, here's what He does. He says, well then, you're not going to be able to add me to the other balls in the air. It's not, I've got family, faith, church family, and work, and also following Jesus. Here's what He says. When you decide to follow me, I give you family, and I give you a church family, and I give you work. All of that is going to be lived like a believer, gospel people, and it's going to bring me honor and glory. So in other words, you're going to be a disciple, and you're going to live like a disciple in all those areas of your life. And I am the one who's going to prioritize what's most important for you. I get to tell you what the priority is because you have trusted me and I have purchased you and made you my own. So now you don't have to take your priorities from your demanding family. You don't have to take your priorities from your demanding boss. You don't have to take your priorities from a demanding, desperate pastor who says, look, if you don't take this on, if you don't work harder in the church, if you don't give more and sacrifice more, it's all on you and this place is going to deflate and collapse. There are pastors who lead churches and they're building a kingdom and they're building it on the backs and on the health of families. When there's health in spiritual leadership helps you discern that's too much. That's too much. That's going to take away from your family and your work rather than adding a level of health to your family. Overbearing parents don't tell us what the priorities are like, our priorities are. Here's who it is. We who believe now belong to Jesus. And Jesus says, God, thank you for giving them to me. They belong to me. Now they exist for my honor, my glory. So everything they do is going to be done as a disciple. Discipleship. And see, we're in real trouble when we think of all the things we have to do, and one of the balls in the air is discipleship or following Jesus, right? Now I've got family responsibilities, and I've got church family responsibilities, and I've got work responsibilities, and now I'm following Jesus, and they're all up there. Does that make sense? Following Jesus is not another ball in the air. Whenever we try to fit God into our busy schedule, it exposes a myth that we can somehow find a balance and that our discipleship is just another aspect of our life. And that isn't true. Rather, disciples, we are now disciples who parent, who serve, and who work. So all the people who belong to Jesus are alive, and he gives us new priorities. And specifically, some of you have goals in here, right? If you talk about goals and priorities, you have them already. Some of you, your goal is to, you're in school and your goal is to graduate. At least I hope that's your goal, right? My goal in school was to stay in school as long as possible until they told me, time to go. You're 31, you got it, it's time to move on. You're making us nervous around the students. I've often said, I just imagine, when I was a college student, I imagined, what would it be like if I could live like a college student and at the end of the week pick up a paycheck for being a student? Wouldn't that be a blast? But most of us, that's not our goal. Our goal is to earn a degree. Some of you are working to earn a promotion or working to earn a raise in your job. Some of you are working to retire, and you're hoping that you can retire soon enough to actually enjoy it. And some of you, your goal is to send all your kids away to college. For others, your goal is to send all your kids away. You don't care if they go to college, it don't matter. That's the goal. For others, their goal is to get married. For others, they already are married, and their goal is to stay married. Others say, my goal is to get healthy. Look, we have goals. We have priorities. The Apostle Paul says, let me ask you a question. Is there any greater goal in our life as a believer than to live a balanced life? Paul says, have a goal. Get more balance in your life. Get less activity and more meaning in your life. Paul says, I want to help you understand that gospel people protect their lives. They don't allow their lives to be cluttered with chaos. Why? Because they live with a new goal, and the new goal is not success. The new goal as gospel people is balance and health and strength and boundaries and guardrails. This is what he says, verse 11. Make it your goal. Gospel people, make it your goal. To do what? To live a quiet life. To mind your own business and work with your hands, as we've instructed you before. We've already been over this. Let me remind you, make it your goal as gospel people, lead a quiet life, mind your own business, and work with your hands. So God is helping his people to protect their lives. How? Aspire to lead a lifestyle that has balance. And he says, it's important for you and I as gospel people to protect our lives from hyperactivity and chaos. How do we do that? Number one, lead a quiet life. And here's what he means, that my goal in my private life is not achievement and success at the cost of peace. In other words, he's saying, if you're a gospel people, you lead a quiet life where you're content with peace, not bigger, better, more achievement and success that drives us into chaos. Instead, protect your personal life from hyperactivity and chaos. And then he says, protect your relationships with the church family. How? By minding your own business. I don't know if you've ever been involved in some kind of dramatic clash with another person and your relationship is getting frayed and fragile and it's abrasive because somebody stuck their nose in someone else's business. And if you want a balanced life, you can't be at odds with people all the time because you're nosy and a busybody getting involved. And here's what Paul's saying. Paul's saying, if you want peace in your life, concern yourself with your business, not someone else's business, because as soon as you do, you're going to realize, I got a lot of stuff to get together. I got a lot of work to do. And when you are involved in other people's business, you are grace-giving and humble. In other words, he's saying, if you're a gospel people, you're too humble and grace-giving to be involved in anyone else's business, trying to tell them what to do or how to live their life. Mind your own business, patience. I love this about Paul. Paul is a loving shepherd, and here's what he does. Paul the Apostle takes his church members like us, and he says, come here, let me give you a hug. And you say, oh, I really like this. And then he steps back and goes, just slaps you across the face. Whoa, what was that for? Because I love you. And then he gives you another hug. And somehow you feel motivated and inspired because he tells you the truth, but he does it lovingly. And he says, stay out of people's business. Why? Because it's going to help you live a balanced life where you're not involved in kind of relationship chaos. And by the way, people who are in relationship chaos in the church family, they get less and less involved because there are people that they're more and more at odds with. Oh man, I would go to that, but what if I see her? You know, I'd be a part of that. I would participate in that. I would serve there. I would share there, love there, encourage there. I would be a part of that, except what if they come? What if she's there or he's there? What if the pastor's there? I go on Sundays, but there's that guy every Sunday. Right? And that's what happens. And Paul is saying, if you want peace in your life, mind your own business. Right? And that goes, you know what, for some of us, that means shutting down Facebook once and for all. and just staying out of people's business, other than using it to say, I love you, I'm encouraged by you, I'm here, and I'm watching your awesome life. But beyond that, good grief, it is such a, it could be a form of conflict and nosiness. Number three, he says, protect against idleness. How do I protect against idleness? You know what? If you have too much time on your hands, you get yourself in trouble. You have a gift, a talent. Go to work, be productive, and do so so well that you have a little extra to share with people who are in need. And so Paul is saying one of the ways that we find balance is that we actually live a productive lifestyle of independence, not a lifestyle of dependence. You know the difference between a church family where you meet somebody who has a need compared to somebody who doesn't? Both of them say they're needy, but one has a need and the other one has just begun to cultivate a lifestyle of dependence. Paul says, don't let yourself be that guy. If you fall into hardship, the Bible says the church family should rally around and give and contribute and help pull you up out of that little trap or that hole that you've fallen into, help you catch up and help bring healing to your life. But the church family is not compelled to continue to enable people to live a lifestyle of dependence on other people. And here's what Paul's answer is to those people. If you have a need and you've somehow developed a lifestyle of dependence, get a job. Work with your hands. Be productive. Be so productive you can be a need meter and you can be someone who's a giver, not a taker. And so these are the ways in which he says protect your life and work with your hands. Be productive. Don't be consumed with bigger, better, and more. Just be productive. Meet the needs that you have, the needs that your family have. And most of you probably already agree balance is needed. Wouldn't you say that that's true? You already know. Balance is needed. I already know that. I already have thought through that. It's always kind of a question. So I think it's probably worth us asking a clarifying question. If we know this is true, how do we get this right? What steps can we take? What can we do? Where do I start to get this right? So I'm going to give you three ways that you actually will discover if you read through this book that we've added to our series called Gospel at Work. I think we still have one left, maybe. He points these three things out, so I want to share them with you really briefly, okay? How do we start? What is a very doable next step? Number one, pursue faithfulness first. So what does that mean? What that means is this. There is a minimum threshold of time required to maintain a healthy investment into your family, your faith family, and your work. Let me say that again. There's a threshold. And that means that there's a minimum amount of time and energy required invested in your family, your church family, and in your work in order to be healthy. Minimum. Right? That's faithfulness. We are faithful to the three things that God has given us first. And the minimum threshold is revealed by God in Scripture. Let me see if I can summarize these. This might be difficult for you to actually kind of take in, but I want to throw them out there for you to begin with. The minimum faithfulness to family. What is that? What is the minimum faithfulness to family? See, it's easy for us to think that there's no minimum. Family is maximum all the time. It's impossible. But here's what God says in the Scriptures. That the minimum faithfulness to family means this. My primary emotional and spiritual energy is invested in my family. My primary emotional and spiritual energies are aimed at my family. I love and lead my family first, including myself. Secondly, the church family. The minimum for faithfulness to your church family is every member of the church family has a meaningful commitment to people and to participate. What does that mean? That means you have a commitment to the church family that leads you to meet together regularly. We're doing that now. But also to be actively involved in encouraging, loving, and urging other members of the church family on in their faith and in their life. So it's people. And then we've got work. The minimum faithfulness to work is to be able to provide and care for my family's basic needs, shelter and food, and also to earn enough to share leftovers with others in need. So that's the minimum, right? If you have a life of balance, then it's going to start there. Minimum threshold for family, church family, and work. And that is the basics. And how do you know when you're failing in faithfulness? When I'm not making a minimum investment in one of those areas, the way I just described it, it might be because of idleness. So maybe I'm too lazy, to do enough to work, or I'm somehow starting to become dependent on other people. I've started to become stingy. I can't give away because I'm taking so much. And also, there's another way to fail, and that's idolatry. Not just idleness, but also idolatry. And that means when time or energy that is being invested is being taken from somewhere else. I'm borrowing or stealing my time from something else. I'm drawing it from another area of responsibility. So secondly, if we've done the minimum, right, we've got faithfulness, what do we do next? What's the next step? And it would be this, to add fruitfulness. First is faithfulness, then fruitfulness. And fruitfulness means that you have become so steady and so faithful in those other areas that you start to have a little overflow, and now you get to decide where you give those particular that particular time. So there's a fruitfulness that comes next. And any extra time, any extra energy, any extra money beyond the minimum, after finding the minimum threshold, is able to be given away. That means an extra family vacation that you had always wanted to take. You take on a new responsibility in the church family. Perhaps you agree to a little extra overtime or responsibility at work. Why? Because the minimums, you've been faithful to the minimums. Does that make sense? So now there's some overflow. And some of you might say, look, Pastor Dan, I would love to do that, to invest a little extra, but you got to understand something. My schedule is crazy. I feel bad I don't have enough time. I feel bad that I can't invest some of the fruitfulness of my life. I wish I had some spare energy. I wish I had some spare money. I wish I had some spare time to give more, but my schedule is what? Crazy. It's insane. And when we look at it that way, it is difficult to find any kind of fruitfulness. But here's what a famous leader of leaders teaches, Stephen Covey. Here's what he said. You'll see this on the screen behind me, perhaps. The key is not to look at all of your schedule and say, here's my entire schedule. How do I sort this out and prioritize it? The key is to empty your schedule, put your priorities on it, and put them in order. And then whatever comes next, whatever kind of I have time for, then I fill in with my schedule. Let me give you an example of what that means. I'm going to ask you a question. Please don't answer this publicly because it could be literally embarrassing. But how many of you have been a few weeks at a time without a shower? Don't answer the question. Although if that's true for you, probably the person near you already knows the answer to that question. But most of us don't go very long without bathing. Have you ever been 1 month down the road and you think to yourself, oh my goodness, I know what that is. I haven't bathed. My schedule's been so crazy. Now, if you're a parent and you've got young children, you know what it's like to go without bathing for days. I mean weeks. I'm talking about weeks. How many of you have missed a meal and then another meal and another meal and you went to see the doctor and they said, what's happening? You're malnourished. Really? Come to think of it, I don't think I've eaten in weeks. My schedule's been so crazy. You know why? Here's why. This is why. Bathing and eating is a priority. We put it in our schedule. Doesn't matter if we work too much. Doesn't matter if we're strung out in this area or that area. We always make time. We don't have time. We make time to bathe and eat. True? For most of us? If you're a junior higher and you have been bathing more than once a month, keep up the good work. You're right on track. This is so proud. And so this is what Paul is teaching us. That fruitfulness is a matter of choosing our priorities and saying, I'm going to build up some faithfulness in these areas, and any overflow, I'm going to give it away. I'm going to give it away out of my strength. It's not going to be sucked out of me and sacrificed out of me, but instead I'm going to say, these are what's important to me, my family, my church family, my work, all because they belong to God, and He wants to be honored and glorified by the way I do these things, and I'm going to clear my schedule and build my priorities in. I'll spare you the details, but I've learned to do this with my mornings and say, here are the things that are a priority for me to be the healthiest leader and dad and husband that I could possibly be, and these are the ways that I have to build these things into the structure of my schedule, or I'm not my healthy self. And then whatever's left over, whatever time is left over, it's given away. Or it's applied to these different areas, I should say. And I think it's always a challenge, but always a good start. So how do we avoid starving one of these areas? The third thing that I wanted to kind of roll out there to you before we wrap this up is this. We restrain ourselves from idolatry always. So first is faithfulness, then we add fruitfulness, and always we restrain ourselves from idolatry. So the word you're looking for there in your notes is never idolatry. Faithfulness, fruitfulness, never idolatry. I never go overboard. I never get so involved in one of those areas that I'm now stealing from the other areas. I'm never so drawn in. Here's how God says we can do that. Because in Proverbs, there's wisdom, and God gives us wisdom to guide our lives. And here's what he says in Proverbs. Don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. And that answers the question, how do I starve my church family and my personal family? How do I starve them? Because we wear ourselves out trying to get rich. We need something bigger. We need something better. We need something more. So we wear ourselves out trying to get rich. And here's what he says. Be wise enough to know when to quit. Know when to call it off. Know when to say, okay, this is too much. Now, don't we know that some people are wearing themselves out not because they're trying to get rich, but because they're trying to catch up? They've made some financial decisions that have ensnared them. Somebody bailed on a business deal, and now you've got to pick up the pieces for the rest of your life, and you are wearing yourself out not because you're trying to rich, but just because you're trying to get back on track, right? We know that people's lives go that way. If that's you, get some help. Find a coach or a mentor or some kind of leader that can help you kind of come back to shore and get out of the deep end. But during this message, I wonder if you've quietly wondered to yourself, what could be causing me? What are the things causing me to fall below the minimum? How am I not able to find this balance of faithfulness? Here's why. It's likely that if you can't find faithfulness balance in your life, here's why. It's because somehow you've begun to idolize one of the other two areas in your life. Idolize. And when that happens, we have to, in order to spend extra time and energy, we have to steal it from one of the three areas, right? If you've got a piece of pie, you can only cut it up so many ways. It's got to come from another area, and we all have a limited amount of time to do that. So why would any of us wear ourselves out for success, to be successful? To be what we have been taught is successful, or to be what we believe to be successful, or because success is more important to me than balance. And when that happens, we have to cheat our families or cheat our church families in order to continue to become more successful and celebrate and to enjoy more achievement. So, and there's three lies that basically help us do this, three specific lies that help us do this. Number one, it has to do with our family life. We can easily believe this lie, that if I want my children to be normal, if I want them to be successful, I have to sacrifice our connections, our relationships in our church family, or I have to take another exhausting job to help make that happen. So that why? So that my kids can be normal and successful. And that'll drive some of us to cheat our faith family or to cheat our own family. We can also lie to ourselves regarding our church family life. I have to sacrifice balance. I have to sacrifice balance to be who the church needs me to be. And here's the lie. The lie is this. I'm irreplaceable. If I don't do this, I have been made to feel like, or I have naturally feel like, the church is just going to collapse, or it's going to deflate, or somehow the blood is on my hands for those who are no longer able to participate in the church because you aren't doing enough. And when we start telling ourselves I'm irreplaceable, we start forcing our life off the rails and out of control. Then there's a work lie. Let me tell you the work lie. You're going to recognize this, right? Here's the work lie. My job needs me, and I know that my family will be okay without me. You know what the truth is? Your family needs you. And your employer, they're going to be fine without you. Your work, they're going to be fine without you. Trust me, if you put your 2 weeks' notice in, 2 weeks from now, you're going to be replaced. Your work will be fine without you. Your family needs you. And you see what I'm saying? These lies draw us into a life that's lived off balance where we wear ourselves out. And then the results are this. My health is failing. My marriage is failing. My family is distant, chaotic, and disconnected. My connections in my faith family just become surfacey because I don't have time to invest relationally. And you may be just simply agreeing too much, saying yes too much. By the way, every yes you say to family, church family, or to work is a no to one of the other areas, right? Every time we say yes to one, we have to say no to the other two areas. So how do you take another step in starting to get back on track? I'm going to give you a small word that's going to help change your life. Here it is. It's the word no. No. Try using the word no to bring balance back to your life. Some of you thought the word was I quit, but it's just no. You don't have to quit. Just say, you can try saying no. And if we learn to say that well, and for some of you who are people pleasers, you don't like to say no ever. The thought of saying no just makes your heart race, you know. But the last time the boss leaned on you and said, hey, can you give me another weekend? You said, yes. And in the back of your mind, you're saying, am I crazy? How am I going to explain this? How am I going to pull this off? There's no way this is possible. Or a church leader came to you and said, hey, we have this responsibility, this role. We think you'd be a great fit for that. And you say, yes, of course. And in the back of your mind, you say, why do I always say yes to everything? Isn't there someone else who has a pulse who can fit in and take this responsibility? Let me give you a way to deal with, I'm a people pleaser and I need to learn to say no. There's a phrase that you could use that might work when your employer's leaning on you and says, hey, can you give me another Sunday morning? I need another Sunday morning, another weekend from you. This time, we really need you to do this, and you can use this phrase, maybe next time. You don't have to say no. You can say maybe next time. Or you could say, I can't right now. And Andy Stanley's done some great work helping us in this particular area in a book called Choose to Cheat. And here's what he says. That most of us are only saying no temporarily because of the phase of life we're in. No, I said, I can't do that now because I have grandbabies that I'm trying to help raise. I have children. I have little ones in the home I'm trying to raise. So no for now. But later on, yes. I say no very often to going out and playing golf. But I long for the day that one day the phase of life has changed and I'm just saying yes all the time. But I can't say yes all the time to 4 hours and $40. I can't say yes. I've got little ones at home. And that just means being able to aim your no at something. Every time you say no to one thing, you're saying yes to something you've decided is more important. And if you aim your nose, you can make clear and dramatic decisions. And here it is. Say no to buying more and try downsizing your life. Say no to buying more and downsize your material lifestyle. Secondly, it might be as easy as saying no to doing more and divesting my time into fewer things, but doing them in a more healthy, deeper way. And what this might mean is that some of us are compelled by God to call a family meeting and say, listen, everybody, I wanted to talk to you. God is at work in me, and I want you to know something. Hear me now. I'm going to say this out loud. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. I'll never forget this story that was told by a friend of mine who was speaking at a conference, and he said that in early September, his kids started to bring home these little paperwork about who they are and who their family is. And he said, I came home in the evening one time and I had just come from work and I was sorting through my child's paperwork and I noticed that one of my first graders had drawn up a family portrait. And he said, this is odd. There's 6 people in our family. There's 5 people in the portrait. There's no dad. Interesting. So he said, I took my little picture up to my first grader. And I said to him, draw daddy in there. I'm just kidding, he didn't say that. He kneeled down next to his bed and he slid the paper over and he said, hey, little buddy, look at it. I noticed this family picture is, I love it. It's so good. I love it. Thanks, Dad. He did all the colors. It was so beautiful. And the kid said, thanks. I mean, it was a school project and the teacher wanted us to kind of draw our family portrait. And he said, buddy, let me ask you a question. Did you notice daddy's not in the picture? He said, yeah. Yeah, I noticed that. Well, I'm kind of curious. Where's daddy? And he said, and the little guy said, daddy, you're not in our family. You're at work. And in his mind, in his little heart, dad is either a part of the family or he's at work. But he had not worked out a way to help his little guy realize he's both. He works and he is a part of the family. And listen, Church family, if we don't get this right, there's a lot at stake. If we don't get this right, our marriage is at stake, our families are at stake, our kids are at stake, and our church family's at stake, and being productive at work, it's all at stake. And there is a way for us to find balance, but we're not going to one day wake up and go, oh my goodness, my life is so balanced. Look at the clock, look at the calendar, everything's on schedule, I have nothing to do. Everything is, it doesn't work that way. Paul says, aspire to have one goal. Live a life you bow your heads with me. Our ushers are coming now to hand out the elements for communion. Father, teach us, grow us, help us to discover you and to cherish balance. And we thank you for doing it. Inspire us to know you better, to grow deep in our faith. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Would you receive?